Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here he is. Here's your host, J.J. Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the NBC Sports Washington Capitals Face-Off podcast. I'm, of course, your host, the Capitals correspondent, J.J. Regan. With me today, he's the Capitals insider. He is the Mr. Smee. It's my Captain Hook. He is Tarik El-Bashir. Tarik.
They're getting more and more obscure.
How is that one obscure? Everybody knows who Mr. Smee is.
I do not. Corey?
You're the worst at these pop culture references. Corey, do you know who Mr. Smee is?
Absolutely. It's the, yeah, the guy with the, like, the right-hand man, you know. Dustin Hoffman. You never saw Hook with Dustin Hoffman?
The guy who actually made everything work? The guy behind the scenes that kind of, like, you know, was the fixer? Yeah, that's me.
As you have heard, we have a special guest today, Corey Massasek from The Athletic. Corey, thanks for hopping on with us.
Thank you for having me.
We are here after Game 2 to talk about the Capitals-Penguins series, a series in which is tied 1-1, so everybody's burning of the town and rioting after Game 1, after the Penguins' comeback win was a bit premature, so it seems. Tarik, how were the Capitals able to rebound from what looked like the quintessential Penguins-Capitals Game 1?
Well, two things stood out to me. Number one, Braden Holtby looked like the goaltender that won the Vezina Trophy a couple of years ago. Two saves in particular, one on Gensel and one on Crosby, both pad saves, really kept the game within reach for the Capitals to go ahead and win. And number two, the Capitals, even though they went back on their heels a little bit after taking that 3-0 lead, I felt like they quickly regrouped and didn't kind of fall into that trap that is so often come back to bite them, which is, you know, trying to protect the lead and sitting back, and then all of a sudden, uh-oh, what happened? So I would say goaltending, you know, as I've said a number of times on this podcast, sometimes, especially this time of year, hockey should be called goalie, because it is the most important position on the ice, and it's not even close. And, you know, the Caps kept pressing forward after getting knocked on their heels a little bit late in the second period.
Corey, as someone who has not been beaten down and broken by the history that is the Washington
Capitals. What are you talking about? He covered the team for the Washington Times for how many years was that? Me and you were on the beat together?
3 years with the Times, 1 year for a little company called Comcast Sportsnet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was around for
enough of it.
We had some long nights in Montreal.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Some long nights.
2010.
But basically, I think a lot of people walked away from Game 1 saying, okay, same old, same old. But the question everyone has been asking about the series is, will this year be different? After the first two games, have you seen anything to say that this year is going to be different? Or was Game 1 a reflection of things to come?
I would say this. I think these first two games have looked a lot like some of the games from last year, which I think people would immediately go, oh my God, they're going to lose again. But like, they outplayed the Penguins for vast parts of that series, almost every game.
I'd go 50 minutes of Game 1 and almost all of Game 2.
Right. And so, like, I'm saying, like, last year, the series between the two teams was almost every game, the Capitals felt like they outplayed the Penguins. They thought they outworked them, and then it just didn't show on the scoreboard. So, like, to me, if they play the way they did the first two games in this series, they're going to have a good chance to win it. And just because they lost one game, and, you know, like, it shouldn't. I know it shouldn't be like, oh my God, the world is ending. But I totally get. Like, I mean, you know, the first game, like, they control the play, and then Sidney Crosby goes out, and, you know, they get a goal on three straight shifts and rip their hearts out. So, I thought, you know, Game 2, I mean, they could have won by more. You know, Matt Murray was also pretty good. So, To me, these first two games have looked like almost every other Capitals Penguins playoff game. Crazy, all sorts of, you know, hair on fire stuff happening. You know,
lots of talent, lots of motivation. It's fun.
Potential suspensions happening or not happening. It's just it's all chaos. So remember, I don't know. I'm sure Tarek remembers this. That first playoff series that they won with Bruce Boudreau, they beat the New York Rangers in overtime, and we're sitting in there talking to Bruce at Verizon Center at the time. And we find out as he's talking that the Hurricanes had come back to beat the Devils. And so that meant the Capitals were playing the Penguins. We all thought we were going to, I think it was Philly for the second round. Mm-hmm. We didn't find out, and immediately Bruce's first line was welcome to the circus. Yep. And literally, I mean, we have had how many now? Over 20 playoff games between these two franchises in this era of the rivalry.
In the Ovechkin, Malkin, Crosby era.
Almost every one of them is a circus.
Well, the number that really jumped out to me, and I put this out on Twitter right before the game, the Penguins in the Malkin, Crosby era have never lost a series when they go up 2-0. So they were 10-0 with the opportunity to do that in game two. So probably a good thing the Capitals played their best game of the postseason and got that win.
You know, I'm back checking the puck and he stopped. Obviously, it's a big collision, and I'm at no point trying to target the head at all. I'm skating, back checking, trying to do my job, and unfortunately, there's a collision there. And you know what? I've watched it briefly, and I don't realize what I can really do any different. I'm just trying to. At the last second, I see Ovi coming in, and you can see me bracing too as well, and I end up getting kind of taken out as well. So, you know what? I got to analyze it a little more, and obviously, you never want to see a guy go down. So, hoping he's better, and we'll see what happens. You know, it's hockey. It happens really fast. I think if you watch it at game speed, I don't even alter my movement at all. I'm just skating straight, and the way I look at it, there's no way I can get his head from that point where I am. He stops and turns, and I'm kind of right there as O's coming in pretty aggressively, and you know, it's a collision. I end up getting blown right out of the water too, so it's it's a bit of an unfortunate play that he got hurt, and we'll see what happens, and we'll keep moving forward here. There's more important things going on. We got a team in here that's feeling pretty good and confident, and we got to go to Pittsburgh and get a game. I mean, I'm not gonna say I didn't get him in the head. It wasn't a body check to the head. I think I graze his head as I'm skating by him, as he's getting hit by Ovi. So if you watch it from multiple angles, you don't see me like lunge into his head or anything. I'm skating there. His head actually kind of hits kind of the bottom of my arm. So, you know, I was surprised when I kind of got up to see that he was down and out like that. So, not out, but, you know, down on the ground and collecting himself. So it's, you never want to see a guy go down. He's a warrior. We've played against him, and he's a solid guy. So hopefully he's all right, and we can deal with that and keep moving.
Tom gets a lot of scrutiny, but how have you seen him kind of balance playing physical with also playing clean?
He's evolved. He still plays a real hard game. He's a bull in a china shop. And when he gets motoring, boy, he's a force. But you can see he's making a conscious effort on his hits to keep his elbows down, stay on his feet. Offensively, his game's come a long ways, but his physical play is, he's trying to walk the line of being a real physical player but play clean, keeping his elbows down, feet on the ice. I think he's doing a good job. He's playing the game the way he should, the way he needs to be a really effective player. He's been really good for us, and I'm sure that'll continue.
Now, Corey, you mentioned the possible suspension for Tom Wilson. It was reported this morning from Greg Wyshynski that no hearing will be coming for Tom Wilson. Of course, we were talking about the hit to the head from Tom Wilson to Brian Dumoulin that ended Brian Dumoulin's night. Now, Tarek and Corey, clearly this is a black and white issue, so you can pick from one of two choices. Either Tom Wilson is evil incarnate and is trying to intentionally hurt every player on Pittsburgh's team so that the Capitals can win by disqualification because Pittsburgh will have no more players to dress in the series, or Tom Wilson is an innocent angel who gets framed constantly and is always at the wrong place at the wrong time.
So which is interesting.
B.
Actually, look, he's not innocent. He's no angel. He knows what he's doing. There's a lot of accidental on purpose with his game, okay? But I will tell you this. After watching that play a dozen times, there were a lot of extenuating, mitigating, whatever-ing circumstances going on with that play. It looked to me like Brian Dumoulin was simply trying to get out of the freight train known as Alex Ovechkin, turned around a little bit. He was on his edge, so he was already probably – he's a big guy, but he was already down a little bit. And, you know, was trying to avoid getting trucked by Ovechkin. And he didn't know that Tom Wilson was coming at 27 miles an hour behind him. And I know that was 27 miles an hour because I'm good at measuring speeds of players coming around the net. But he just didn't see him in time. And it was an unfortunate confluence of events that ended Dumoulin's night. And I understand why Penguins fans are up in arms, because Tom Wilson has done this before. Many times. This season he's been suspended. So I get it, but I don't feel like there was any other way the league could have come down on this. He didn't leave his feet. He didn't make a major adjustment to his line. And unfortunately, Dumoulin's head and his shoulder collided.
Corey, knowing that your answer will determine whether people from Washington or Pittsburgh ever take you seriously again, what was your interpretation of the hit?
It's a lot of weight you just put on Corey's shoulders.
My interpretation would be that as the NHL rulebook is currently constituted, they probably made the right decision. But whether or not you think
– rules are the rules, bro.
Yeah, whether or not you think the rulebook should be written exactly the way it is, that's obviously another fight.
I've known you for like 15 years here, Corey, and you are leaving open to interpretation that maybe you don't believe that the rulebook is written properly.
I don't think it would change hockey and make it a terrible sport for everyone to watch if, like Ken Dryden has suggested, that you just make contact to the head a penalty. I mean, there is actually a penalty in the rule book for contact to the head. Mm-hmm. I cover the New Jersey Devils now, and they had a kind of similar situation in their first round series where Blake Coleman turned and basically ran into Miguel Sergachev's elbow or forearm or whatever.
Sure.
And Sergachev was not suspended, but he did get a penalty on the play. And so, you know, there are several layers of this, but one issue for fans is that they see a hit like that and they just assume immediately that it either has to be a suspension or not. And just because Tom Wilson wasn't suspended didn't mean that he did nothing wrong on the play. Like maybe the NHL thinks he should have been suspended. Suspended is the wrong word. Maybe the NHL thinks he should have had a penalty on the play. They could have given him a penalty and kicked him out of the game, and that would have been enough punishment. They would not have given him a suspension. So like, I just think that one of the biggest issues with all of these Department of Player Safety things is everyone looks at all of these hits and says, okay, that is worth X amount of games. There are some, like, and, you know, maybe in this case where it should have just been a 2-minute penalty, or it could have been a 5-minute penalty, but that's it.
And there was no penalty called, yeah. And the referees they huddled and actually had a little discussion, and they decided amongst themselves that didn't warrant a penalty. Yeah.
And the NHL, and as the current rules are written, like, the NHL can't, you know, there's no one can call in from New York with a buzzer and say, right, hey, no, actually, give that guy a penalty. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe that's something they would.
Oh, would consider. My God. Could you imagine those 8 o'clock starts? Games would be going on until 1 o'clock in the morning.
I just grabbed the mic for no one. No one can see this. No, I'm not talking about like 5-minute reviews to determine whether or not it's a penalty or not.
You mean
I'm just talking about like someone in New York sees the third replay before the next faceoff has even happened, and just bang, okay, you know, there's a buzzer, someone hits and says, hey, give that guy 2 minutes for hitting a guy in the head.
For the record, I do not like that.
Well, Corey, while you were talking, your terrible towel slipped out of your pocket. You may want to tuck that back in there. So on the play, Dumoulin sees Ovechkin, and he stops and turns back. My interpretation was that it was unavoidable, and that's why he didn't get a penalty on the play. I wondered if he would get a suspension just because of his reputation, because Tom Wilson gets a lot of these, well, it's not really worthy of a suspension, but it's right on the line, and there's only so many times you can get that before you get dinged. And looking at the replay, he may have extended just a little bit at the end of that hit there, but ultimately unavoidable, so I think they made the right call. Looking forward to the rest of the series.
Oh, it's about to get good.
Things are about to get really interesting. Now it's going to shift to
the Penguins are pissed.
The Penguins
are pissed.
Capitals
are confident. Get that alliteration there? Penguins pissed. Capitals confident.
I think, the Penguins may be a little bit mad just because you insulted Mike Sullivan's shirt and tie combo from game two.
And like orange. What was that? What was going on there?
That was a bit of a bizarre choice from him. And you know what? You know, so
there were other things.
There
were the disallowed goals. I mean, there was the goaltender interference. I mean, there was other stuff that the Penguins had.
This was
plenty of reason to feel like the league was, unnecessarily.
We hear it from,
stop talking over me.
This is the only way I can get a word in edgewise. Are you tired? We hear it every year about how fans believe that the NHL is in for Pittsburgh, that they always want Pittsburgh to win. Game two is the foil to that theory, considering that every call went the Capitals' way all game long, except for that missed trip on Devontae Smith.
Fans are funny.
I know. Fans are great. But speaking of fans, I read all the comments from my stories from game two.
Mistake number one.
They're all upset because they think they're all upset because they think I'm a Pittsburgh fan and I hate
guys, for the record, JJ used to bring, before he wrote a lot about the Capitals for our website, he used to bring a Capitals lunchbox to the office. A Capitals lunchbox.
So looking forward to the rest of the series, what do games 3 and 4 have in store?
Well, in my opinion, guys, I think it's about to get good. There's always a level of hatred between these two franchises given everything that's happened in the postseason and the regular season and what have you. But, now we have a Penguins team that feels like it got robbed. You got a Capitals team that feels like it should be up 2-0 and had some bad breaks in the first game of the series. And I think you have, and this might be the homer in me, because I have a little bit of homer gene in me, but I feel like the Capitals kind of have the Penguins where they want them a little bit right now. I mean, even though it's 1-1, they really should be up 2-0. And I feel like the Penguins, they were pretty bad in game two. I thought they were pretty bad in game two, and I think that if the Capitals can get one game in Pittsburgh, I think the chances of getting this done in 7 looking pretty good for the Caps.
I don't think the Capitals ever have Pittsburgh where they want them until the series is over.
Because you're a fan and
For the record, Tarek just advocated a Game 7 in Washington between the Penguins and Capitals.
One in which he seems to think that the Washington would win. So
You know why?
But here.
Murphy's Law. The Law of Averages. Things have to change. I mean, they just don't continue to stay the same.
Corey.
So two things. One, I think one thing to watch for is this is the 10th series in 3 years for the Penguins. Obviously, they have, like, because the NHL only used to have a couple of rounds every year, they've won like the third or fourth most series in a row in NHL history.
They have played 57 playoff games over the last two games. If you count games 1 and 2 of this series, 57.
Yeah.
That is the most anyone's ever played in the span of 2+ seasons, postseasons, and they're tired.
Yeah. So, right. So the longer the series goes, I mean, I know Capitals fans will freak out if the longer it goes, but no, I mean, it is something that's going to be worth monitoring. If there are just certain moments in the games where little things like the Caps winning puck battle, you're winning races to battles, little things that might happen. I mean, look, it's a totally different team, but there are still a few guys from it. The Penguins, and they went to the Cup Final in 08, they went to the Cup Final in 09, and in 2010, everyone remembers, the Capitals getting locked, but Yaroslav Halak wasn't that good against the Penguins in the second round. They were just completely out of gas. Like, that series got to game 7 and they were toast. So that's one thing. The other thing that is a little less rosy is one of like the 10 best players in the world hasn't played a game in the series yet, and he's probably about to. So that's one thing that there is one guy
that's an excellent point. Not only does Malkin give them one of the best players in the world back, and gives them one more dynamic player on the power play, which hasn't been all that great so far in the series, it forces the Capitals to choose in terms of who they want to match up against Crosby and who they want to match up against Malkin. And it's almost like whichever one you pick, the other one's going to eat you up. So it does get a little harder. That said, I like the way the Capitals are playing right now.
Yeah, you have to like the way the Capitals are playing. Malkin absolutely adds a different dimension, because right now you can easily say, okay, Orlov and Niskanen are on Crosby, and whichever line we want to, right now it's been Backstrom after game 2. Backstrom line,
against Crosby's line. That's the line you have to focus on. Obviously, they have a lot of other good weapons, but that's the line you have to focus on. When Malkin comes back, all of a sudden you have two world-class lines, and now you have to make some tough choices there. The thing that's been – I'm having a hard time figuring out who this Capitals team is this year in the playoffs.
Well, let me tell you. Let me tell you, JJ. They're good.
Because they've lost three playoff games, and in all three of those losses, they've had two-goal leads. They did everything. They put themselves in a position to win. You could arguably they've been in a position to win every playoff game they have been in this postseason.
Because they're good and they're playing like a team.
So they are playing well, for sure.
One more thing I'd like to add. In all my years of covering playoff hockey, there are three barometers that I look at in terms of things that play an outsized role in determining the outcome of playoff hockey games. Goaltending, you've already covered that. Power play and penalty kill. Those three things right now, the Capitals are lights out. If Holtby can continue to play the way he played in games one and two, more like in game two than in game one, but he was still pretty good in game one for long stretches. The penalty kill has killed off 22 straight shorthanded situations dating back to game two of the first series. They have figured something out. They have a higher level of commitment. They're blocking shots. And the power play is just legit. The first unit, the second unit, they're both getting it done right now. And I like the fact that both units are getting it done right now. Those three things, I always feel like, are the areas where you look at the Stanley Cup champion or the guys who got there. They always had those three things in common. Those three things are all clicking and all going. And right now the Capitals have that.
So there are actually reasons to believe that this year could in fact be different. Even after game,
oh, I believe,
splitting game one and two
as
in Washington.
Laughs at me.
Even after splitting game one and two in Washington, and Pittsburgh was without Evgeny Malkin. So there is reason to believe that perhaps the Capitals could pull this off. But we will have to wait and see. Corey, thanks for hopping on with us today.
Thanks, Corey.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dropping knowledge.
Looking forward to everyone getting French fries on their salads in the next couple days.
Our first stop tonight, Pizza Milano on Fifth Avenue, where I can get French fries on my salad.
Thank you. Thank you for stepping beyond the paywall to come talk to us little people for a little while. But no, seriously, check out his work at The Athletic. He is fantastic. And Tarek is okay. But definitely check out my stuff on NBCSportsWashington.com. We will have all the coverage of the series throughout. For Tarek El-Bashir, Corey Mastisik, and JJ Regan, let's get the puck out of here.
See y'all from Pittsburgh.